Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Dunker Spot ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikaias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikaias, I don't know if it's getting hazy or if it's getting messy in Miami, but it's okay. Time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. The series did shift to Miami for game three, and sadly for Miami, the series lead has shifted back to Denver. A 109-94 victory for the Denver Nuggets to take a 2-1 lead in the series. Nikola Jokic, 32 points, 21 rebounds, 10 assists, 2 blocks in the game. First 30-20-10 game in NBA Finals history. Jamal Murray right there with him, a 34-point triple-double for him as well. 22-17 for Bam, wasn't the same efficiency that we saw in game two. Jimmy Butler with 28, but again, not the same level of efficiency there. I was very impressed with what Denver was able to do. I have some defense thoughts that I want to dig into with Denver, because I did think they did a much better job against Miami's pick and roll attack. We talked about it in game, after game two, rather. And after rewatching, I did a video on some of the things that Miami did manipulating Denver's spacing. It felt like Denver said, you know what? We are not going to allow you to have the same openings that you had in game two. One, we're just going to play with better effort. We're going to make sure that we don't have the same lapses that we had early in game two. But beyond that, it felt like there was a little bit more trust placed on Jokic when he was in a drop. Like, you know, we're not going to peel in this help as aggressively as we did in game two behind Jokic. You navigate the drop. We want to make sure Jimmy can't probe, or whoever the ball handler is, they can't probe and really strain out our help and lead to catch and shoot opportunities from there. We're going to make sure Jokic is fine. We're going to make sure the nail help is more peeled in so we get help high. We can keep Jokic closer to the basket. And Miami, there were still some openings, but it certainly wasn't the same level of freedom or the same level of comfort that they saw in game two. And I think that contributed to some of their offensive rhythm being lost in that game three.
It's funny. Because I was just actually reading a quote from Harrison Wind from Coach Michael Malone on Nikola Jokic's defense. Mm-hmm. And Coach Michael Malone said, if you really know what you're looking at, and a lot of people don't, you get the sense that this guy's a really good defender. He does his job. He does what he's supposed to do. Now, I transpose your point with the start of that game, which was Miami essentially continuing game two. Mm-hmm. Max Strus, playmaker. 4 assists early. Hey, pick and roll, drop, roll, we play out of it. I think that Denver did a good job of, one, taking things away. Just the easy cleanup. The limited botch switches, more activity. I thought Jamal Murray actually set a good tone defensively for Denver.
Secret
did. With his activity. Working to contest shots, being more active, and just making it tougher for Miami to hit the right notes. And on the flip side, Miami had to hit the right notes. I feel like in that first quarter, they had pick and roll going, and then they eventually got Jimmy going, and then the second quarter switching got to them, and then they kind of lost the plot as far as attacking automatics and being decisive. And so this, a wonderful game three, a confusing one to kind of digest, if that makes sense. Because you have what Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray did, which was insane. I know we're going to talk about it. You had Miami not turning the ball over.
Again.
Jimmy and Bam were aggressive. You shoot, what, under 40% and you're down by 5 at halftime? That feels like a sort of win, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to kind of unpack this with you and see what we do. But yeah, you can understand why Coach Michael Malone said that we could score. We got a guard for 2.5 days. And you see yeah. the impact when Denver's defense shows up. And again, I'm still caught between how much credit do we give Denver's defense and how much do we also remember, ooh, the margin for error for Miami, very, very slim.
It's very slim indeed. And that's where I kind of land with, again, Denver did do some different things with their help beyond Jokic. And even with Jokic, like it felt like he was in a drop against some players that he normally wasn't against. And he was at the level against some players. Like there was a possession, he was at the level against Jimmy Butler. And I was like, huh, this is interesting. If you're mixing this in, you're able to get away with it. Maybe that's another way you throw Miami out of rhythm. But it was interesting to parse through that, but also parse through the fact that, to your point, Miami did leave some stuff off the table. Like I talked about during my rewatch thread of game two. Oh, wait, Miami absolutely hammered Denver when they empty the corner or empty the side. We saw fewer of those in game three, and the efficiency dropped as well. Outside of the Jimmy Butler Bam by the bio pick and rolls, in which they were still successful against Denver, especially when they empty the side, but you only got 6 of those in game three. And so I just wonder, was it, you know, even after rewatching, was that just Denver doing some things to throw them out of rhythm? Was it just Miami forgetting what got them there and not hammering it enough? I don't know how to kind of parse through that responsibility there. But I guess I do want to hit on something you touched on briefly with the second quarter. I don't understand how Miami looks this lost against the switching once the early second quarter hits. It is 3 straight games of Denver going with Jokic to the bench. Didn't go to the bench often in this game, rather. But Jokic going to the bench, it's Aaron Gordon, Jeff Green in the front court. You know the switching is coming. And it doesn't feel like Miami has a plan a lot of the time. And I don't want to completely remove any kind of praise from Denver's defense because the switching was solid. And I do think their players held up. But I don't know. Like, it just doesn't feel like Miami's been able to find things. I would like to say, okay, they're looking for these actions. They're looking for these mismatches. They're getting these shots. They're missing shots. And they're still losing the minutes versus it feels kind of aimless sometimes for Miami. Am I off on that? Or like, what are you, where are you at now 3 games into the series against those lineups?
I mean, Miami has to be decisive. They've got to take what they've learned from moments of that Boston series and let it apply here. I think the other issue is this, it's just culture shock. If you're so used to attacking a certain thing and certain automatics being open, and now you're facing a team that's switching everything, where do you go? What opens up? I think you got to look at the lineups as well. If Duncan Robinson's movement is being held in check, that takes a pretty massive chess piece off the second unit in theory, because we can't really lean in on that. So, and that's where you credit Denver's defense for being more locked in. And that's where it's like, okay, if we want to do the air quotes on aggressive Bam, that's probably the lineup where they need him to pop. And he probably needs to start attacking Jeff Green in matchups like he attacked Jaylen Brown in matchups in the Boston series. That's probably the adjustment for me with that second unit. Mm-hmm. But again, we saw it in the fourth quarter of game two where Duncan Robinson was able to get free and what that opened up. So I think for that group, they've got to stick with their movement, attack matchups when they can. More importantly, that group's got to defend.
They absolutely have to defend. If I could flip it quickly back to the Denver side, the offense, we touched around it with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, what they were able to do in this game three. They completely won the star battle. They completely dominated this game, particularly on the offensive end of the floor. Between pick and rolls and handoffs, 44 reps between those two in game three, well over 1.1 points per possession. on any trips featuring two-man action between Murray and Jokic. What did you see and what made them so much more successful in this game three?
Well, number one, how do we describe Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray? They literally did something that we have not seen before. Two players from the same team with 30-point triple-doubles in the same game.
And a finals game, for that matter.
Nikias, real quick. Name me the list of players in NBA history in the finals to score 30 points, have 20-plus rebounds, and have 10 or more assists.
But that feels like just Jokic.
It is. Let that sink in. That's wild, right? I think for me, and Jokic is beyond incredible, and I don't want to take anything away from him. I think Jamal Murray was unbelievable in that game. And I think that Jamal Murray set a huge tone for Denver, especially in that first quarter when Miami was, I don't want to say humming, but they had it going. They felt good about what they were doing. And Jamal Murray was able to make plays. He was able to steady the ship for Denver. And his activity on both ends of the floor, but offensively, his aggression really popped for me. We talked about after game two, Jimmy on Jamal, what that does for Miami's defense. Kevin Love on Aaron Gordon, what that does for Miami's defense. And Jamal Murray was like, cool, I see what y'all doing. Let me explore this space. Coach Michael Malone did a great job of working to clear, whether the right wing or the left wing, clear that space so someone wasn't there. Go back and watch the game. See how many times someone cut from that wing or that wing was open. So now Jamal Murray has more room to operate when he comes off that screen. Think about how, I guess this wasn't a movement game from Denver, right?
No.
This was very much a, hey, let's tap this Jamal Murray Jokic pick and roll button. Let's really dive into this two-man game. Let's put this pressure on them. And Jamal Murray able to take the space, turn the corner, be aggressive, taking the cleared out room from the wing, leading the dance. Hey, Bam, I see your drop back there. You eventually are going to have to engage with me. Where you engage with me, that's your decision. But if I have this space, I get downhill, I'm 2 feet out from the paint, I can take a shot. I can get to my pull-up. I can turn the corner and finish. I can hold the defense. Like, those are the plays to me that really stood out. Where now he's penetrating, he's driving, he takes an extra dribble to hold Miami's help.
Yeah.
Jimmy, come work to recover. Bam, you stay right here. Weak side, y'all all stay here. Hey, Jokic, here you are in the short roll. He blended that scoring and that playmaking, and that was huge, to the point that Miami said, you know what, buddy?
Not you anymore.
Here's a trap. this is not working. Here's a trap. And I thought it was effective. The problem is it's effective like a, I'm not a baseball guy, but like what's like a pitch that you want to use, but you don't want to use a lot of, like a curveball?
A curve, a changeup?
Yeah, something like that. Like it works if it's in your arsenal. It can't be your only pitch. Mm-hmm. And once it became what Miami was doing, then the floodgates start to open. And I think the importance of Murray, if you think about it, and sorry, don't mean to go on a tangent.
Oh, you're good.
Think about how he got to Jimmy and Bam. How much navigating Jimmy Butler had to do. How many times he was behind the play when Jamal Murray was attacking. And then think about the counters that Denver worked to take off the table. Hey, game two, cool. Bam, you can be aggressive. Bam, you can switch if we're in trouble. This is something we like. Do you? Here's Jokic posting up someone that's a little bit smaller. And the bonus is, here's Jamal Murray one pass away. So do you feel good about with this anymore?
Help if you want to, pal.
Yeah. And how did you feel about Miami's decision to trap? I guess I'll ask you that real quick.
It felt like a flashbulb moment for me, where I was more so like, oh no. It's a problem that Miami has gotten here. Because when Miami's at their best, we're sprinkling in different schemes just because we want to keep you off balance. We can just press buttons because we know, okay, you're not dealing well with the drop when we have early help peeled in. All right, cool. You think you're getting this? Now it's just a late switch for you. Now we're going to bleed you later in the clock. Now we're going to throw in some zone after we make a basket. Let's see what you do here. It was problematic for me that Miami went from drop to late switch, and Jamal Murray's just torching all of it. Or he's passed it to Jokic, and he's torching the back end of that. And then it got to, we just need to get the ball out of this dude's hands. Because he is too much, he got into a rhythm early. We got to disrupt this rhythm somehow. And it's doubly problematic for me that it got to that point for Miami, because they had already done the lineup slash matchup tweak. Like, they already shifted to Jimmy on Jamal Murray. And so the fact that they had to do that with Jimmy getting that matchup or Caleb Martin getting that matchup, the fact that you're already putting the length on Jamal Murray and you're allocating your best perimeter defenders to him, and you still have to put two on the ball, even with Jokic as the screener, that's a scary place to be in for Miami. So I understand the decision, and I do agree with you. Like, it did ultimately end up effective. Like, even if you zoom out with the Murray-Jokic pick and rolls in particular, it was 31 per second spectrum. I think that was the highest total, at the very least, highest total of the series. I think it's the highest total of the postseason form. I'll go back and check, fact check that one. Only 1.04 points per possession on those trips. So, like, that's a fine number for Miami. But you look at how they were reacting and the looks that Denver was able to get out of that, even when they didn't score, that number undersells how effective it was. And to bounce off of your point, like, Jamal Murray set the tone very early. And it felt like Miami was reeling a lot based on what Jamal Murray was able to do early.
And for me, I go to the flow and the rhythm of the game where Jamal Murray has that first quarter. Jamal Murray has the end of that second quarter. I mean, heck, the whole first half. And now in that third quarter, hey, we still got Nikola Jokic. Yeah. And I just want to point out, Nikola Jokic was exceptionally rude in that third quarter. So game one, game two, you noticed a trend of, hey, whatever the big is, whether it's Bam, Zeller, we're comfortable showing and recovering to Jokic. Whether it's the short roll, whether it's the pop, we're fine. We feel good about it. He flipped that on its head in the third quarter. You saw more pops to the three-point line, not the short roll that he mixed in the second quarter, but no, the three-point line. I'm just going to pop here. He can make that shot. The plays where Jokic caught the ball, had a shot, paused and waited for Bam Adebayo to come fly out, and then said, cool, glad you're here. I'm going to drive right past you. I'm either going to finish or I'm going to force my help. That's very tough. Because again, you've shown your hand. If you're going to be more aggressive, you have to mix it in. Because once you show Denver something, they adjust. And you saw them get more comfortable as it went on to where, oh, this is impactful. Oh, wait, what was it? End of the first half where Jokic was able to force more help and that kick, I think, kicked the Michael Porter Jr. for a three. And then we had Jokic just driving closeouts in the third quarter. And it's like, oh, this is not great. So that's where I'm like, I think it's something that Miami can use in a pinch, but I don't think it's definitely not a thing for them.
Yeah, they can't consistently do that, especially when, to bounce off your earlier point about what Denver did with their spacing, clearing those wings, it's even more stressful for everyone else. Like, we're sending two to the ball against Jamal Murray. Jokic just popping into a worldly amount of space. And now he can take the shot, he can pump a drive, he can do whatever he wants to. And considering Bam is the guy trapping, and depending on who Miami has alongside Bam in the front court, if that's Kevin Love, if he's your last line of defense, like, he's had an impact, that's a whole lot of space for Jokic to navigate and Kevin Love to have to navigate on top of that. And if it's the smaller group, where you have Caleb Martin in as the four, if Bam is trapping, literally everyone else is just small. And that just opens up everyone else. Like, even if you're sending extra help to Jokic, he makes the kick out to the perimeter, like, your whole defense is just compromised. And that's why I was like, it's problematic that Miami was kind of forced into trapping because of how good Jamal Murray was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't we're throwing them drop, we're at the level and we're dropping back, we're throwing a little hedge here depending on who the screener is or what the rest of the spacing is, we'll throw in some zone. If it's Jamal Murray plus the second unit, now we'll throw in some traps just to make sure someone else has to beat us. It didn't feel like Miami was dictating any of that. It was Jamal Murray's cooking. Let's try something else. Jamal Murray is cooking. Let's try something else. Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic are cooking. Let's do something else. They're still cooking. Let's trap Murray and see what we can do from there. That can't be the world that Miami exists in.
It can't. And again, this is where I start to have fun with this game. And I'm going to ask you this question. Steve Special coming up.
Okay.
Stick with me here. Jamal Murray, Jokic, incredible. literally historic performance.
How much of that was because they had to be great?
It wasn't really a movement game from Denver. It was a Murray Jokic game, and an amazing one at that. Don't get me wrong.
That's true. True.
If you're Miami, do you draw any confidence from the fact that, hey, we got them to have to go to that, and those two had to hit those notes? Or is this a scenario where we kind of had them closer to our game and still lost? Denver responded.
I like the question. I feel like... this is a good question, Steve. I like
Come on.
I like it.
Come on. So,
here's my thing. And as I think through it now, this is going to take me back to something that you've said on this podcast quite a bit. So I think you can take a little bit of solace in that, okay, Denver had to go to 45 and 44 minutes respectively for their stars. They had to lean to those guys to a ridiculous degree because we still haven't had the KCP game. We still haven't had the MPJ game. You know, Christian Brown made big plays off the bench, but like you didn't have a big Bruce Brown game, something like that. Like the others didn't step up to a major degree. And so you needed your two stars to step up, and that's cool. So I can get that from Miami side. To bounce off of something that you've asked before, what are the odds that, you know, you always say the deeper you get into a playoff series, it becomes, can you solve this specific thing? Was game three the inflection point where it's like, hey, y'all really don't have an answer for Murray Jokic, do you? Like, we knew that because they're the two best players and they're an elite duo. Like, nah, we're just going to spam these two in actions this time. As opposed to it being like the foundation of what we do and then we have the movement on top of that. No. These two are going to take us home. Let's see you cycle through all of these options, all these schemes, all these different matchups, toggle your help. What answers do you actually have for this duo at full tilt? And if we're at the point where Miami's like, well, here's our hand, and we got two 30-point triple-doubles, does that become the, they can't solve it? They just cannot solve it.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths, and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a good pushback, and I don't have a right answer to this question. Because there's also the flip side, where if you're Miami and you got this heat adjacent, let's call it that.
Yeah.
To where the pace is where we kind of like it. We're not turning the ball over. You guys have to rely on your stars. You're not cutting us up in different ways. And you win that game. And now you still have to deal with those two, and you get the KCP game. Or you get the MPG game. What do you do? Like, that's where it's like, did you lose that opportunity? Did Denver send a message there? I'm going to pause real quick. Just because this sent me, right? Jamal Murray is averaging 26 points and 10 assists on 50% shooting, 38 from three, 90 from the free throw line.
Seems good.
26 and 10 with almost 50, 40, 90, Nikias? In the finals?
Yeah, and he's... Yeah. Yeah.
And look, this is me raising my hand, person who said, hey, you just got to take Jamal Murray off the table for Denver.
What if you can't?
That's the thing. No one's been able to.
Mm-hmm.
He shot sub 40% in three games. Well, four games, this whole playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Game four against Minnesota, game two against Phoenix, game one against Miami, game two against Miami.
It's tough. It's a tough blend.
I guess I'd ask. And actually, before I ask, Christian Brown deserves
what a game for him.
A big time salute.
It's just been like second half of game two into this game three. He's just been really good. The cutting has popped. The defense is really popped. Like the screen navigation for him has been really good. And when he's a part of those like switch all lineups with Denver, he's been nailing those. It's not just a soft switch. It's chewing up space to make sure there aren't openings for Miami to attack there. Helps bog Miami's offense down. He's just doing a really good job of taking advantage of gaps and also eliminating gaps on the other end. He deserves his flowers. Didn't mean to cut you off, but.
No, you're good. I mean, the cutting's been great. I think he gave Miami a huge lift. I mean, Denver a huge lift, sorry. If I'm a Miami fan, I'm probably looking at the deficit and the points that Christian Brown scored and just pulling my hair out. I understand if you're doing that. I'm stuck as we're wrapping through this on a couple things. One, the intensity from Coach Michael Malone. This man is not going to be satisfied until Denver wins this championship.
Can I just quickly add, based on how some of these games have been played / won for Denver, I don't even know how happy he's going to be if they win. Y'all know we could have got this done earlier, right? That man is fed up.
Dude.
In the fourth quarter.
I don't know which moment to take away. I don't know if I go with Coach Michael Malone. Literally, they decided to fill the whole, welcome to the NBA Finals. Here's Coach Michael Malone going off for 2 minutes. Here's the tip-off. I'm looking for pomp and circumstance. I'm trying to see some white towels wave around. Nope, it's Coach Michael Malone.
He's mad. Here's why he's mad. Let's throw the ball up. Let's hoop it up.
And then the fourth quarter, Miami makes just a hint of a run, entering what you like to call the T-Mac zone. And Coach Michael Malone calls timeout and is muttering only to himself, which all basketball people know is a universal sign. I am furious with what I'm seeing right now. Whether it's a coach, basketball player, when they are muttering to themselves with a smile on their face, no.
They are mad.
No, you stay away from that person.
Also, while we're here, you know who else was mad during this stretch? Me. Because Miami chilled. No, because as you know, we enter the T-Mac zone near and dear to my heart. Miami gets two, three. Duncan Robinson hits a three. Stop. Duncan Robinson hits a three. Jamal Murray offensive rebound. Offensive foul, rather. I was like, holy crap, this is a 9-point game with 125 left or whatever it is. Here, let's see what they're going to run out of this baseline play. It is Duncan Robinson trying to scream Jokic. Jokic bowls him over. Everyone's kind of waiting to see if a whistle's going to be blown. It isn't. Bam has the ball with KCP in front of him. It's like, oh, snap. This might go down to 7. We might get free throws. We might get a post up, some help. It's a kick out. Duncan Robinson gets back up before Jokic does. Maybe it's another 3. We get down to 6. We got a basketball game. This man, Bam, takes a pull-up jumper over the outstretched arms of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and clanks it. And then it's a rebound for Denver. It is a foul and then more free throws. And that effectively ends the T-Mac comeback. And I'm just like, what in the world?
Okay, since we're here.
Okay.
How did you feel about the Jimmy and Bam experience? They were aggressive. Jimmy Butler, 24 shots. 28 points. Bam Adebayo, 21 shots, 22 points. Where were you at with them? Because it felt like they had the right mindset. It felt like they had the right focus. Didn't feel like the # efficiency was in their favor, but the aggression was important. How do you balance what they did versus what they could do? Do you feel like this is Denver figured out the answers, or they just didn't, you know, they need to play better? Where are you at with their performance?
I think I land with they were mostly fine in this game. Offensively, like sometimes shots just don't fall. And there were some shots at the rim that Jimmy missed. There were some shots at the rim that Bam missed. There were some jumpers that both of those guys missed against pockets. Like that just kind of happens. And you ultimately need those to be made to win a game. But like I've mostly felt fine about the offense. The defense is where I was more disturbed. And like a lot of that, and I would just say like 85 to 90% of that is just Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic are incredible. And like it wasn't an effort ordeal, but they just got cooked in certain actions. And that's a tough place to be because those are your two best players. Those are your two best defenders. If they can't do it, who can? It's kind of where the question starts to formulate in your mind. But like there was some weird, I'm just trying to figure out how to like phrase this, because I don't want to take away credit from what Denver did and what Murray did in particular, mm-hmm. with like stringing out some of the traps and stuff. But I'm also looking at some of the pick and rolls where Bam's defending, and it's like, it was like a Bruce Brown Jokic pick and roll. And it's Bruce Brown turned the corner, and like Bam holds like two beats too long. And Bruce Brown makes the pass to, I think this is a fourth quarter possession. Bruce Brown makes the pass to Jokic. Now Kyle Lowry is on Jokic because Bam held too long. And it's just like, you are too good, and this game is too important, and these possessions are too important for you to have those kind of mistakes. If Jokic scores over you, or if you switch on to Jamal Murray and he scores over you, you tip your cap because they're great. Miami can't afford like lapses from Bam. And I think it felt like there were more of those in game three. They can't afford like some of the lapses or some of the late movements from Jimmy in terms of his screen navigation or in terms of some of his help. Like I think back to a three Jamal Murray hit on the right wing after they tried to double Jokic. And it was a play we talked about during the watch party, where I think it was Caleb Martin that came down on to help the double Jokic on a post up. It's Jamal Murray one pass away, and then Michael Porter Jr. was spaced beside him. And so you zoom out and it's like, man, this is the danger of Denver. Because like Aaron Gordon's on the floor, but he's in the dunker spot. This is the danger of Denver. You can't guard Jokic one-on-one. You send help. Jamal Murray's there. And if you rotate to him, MPJ's right beside him for the swing. You don't have a good option. But like even on that play, like Jimmy's late to rotate out to Jamal Murray on the three. And it's like, if you get beat, you get beat. But you can't have those kind of plays. And obviously it's easier said than done. I'm talking on a microphone. He's playing NBA Finals basketball on a bad angle. So like, duh. But like, Miami can't really afford those. To swing it back to the offensive side of the ball, I think it was less about, I mean, you want the efficiency to be better, obviously. I feel less worried about the mindset because both of those guys were aggressive. But like how they got some of those looks were kind of air to me. And if I want to go back to like the pick and rolls in particular, like I think it was 15 empty corner or empty side pick and rolls in game two. And they were elite on those. They essentially had the same efficiency number in game three on those, but it went from 15 picks to 6 in game three.
Mm.
And it's just like, again, going back to your earlier point of like Miami kind of losing the plot, just like, okay, where was that? Because as I started the segment talking about Denver's defense being better, you smartly pointed out, hey, early in the first quarter, Miami was still getting good stuff. Max Strus got a couple of good looks, a look for himself, pass to Bam, etc., with it being aside against Jokic in early offense. And so it's like, why did the volume drop? Like, I didn't understand how you have that game and then, okay, we're not going to do more of that.
It's a good point you bring up. And that's where I'm trying to balance Jimmy, Bam, and Miami's purpose. I felt they did what they were supposed to do, and then they stopped doing it. And that's not to discredit Denver's defense at all. Again, Denver did what they were supposed to do. But we had sequences in the second quarter still where Jimmy Butler tapped the Jimmy Butler button. Okay, sweet. I see you in a drop. Here's this pull-up. Oh, Jamal Murray's in front of me? Go ahead, pass me the ball. Are y'all going to help? I'm waiting for y'all. Okay, let me back him down. Y'all going to help now? Oh, there's three of y'all over here. Sweet. I've accomplished my mission. Let's play out of it. So you still had sprinkles of that. This is the part for me. I'm trying to figure out when did they lose it? It felt like that start of that third quarter, or it could have been just after that insane Jamal Murray three, which that play is stuck in my head, folks. I'm sorry. Miami's up 37-33, active defense, crowd is jumping, great activity, flying around, switching, we're good. Jamal hits a three, cuts to one, and it felt like the game changed from there with my revisionist glasses. But to open that third, it felt like they got away from Jimmy cycling through matchups. They got away from putting pressure on Jokic and pick and roll. Like, I know the eyes and the math is not going to add up, but I'm wondering how much pressure did Jokic really feel in that second half?
And that's the other part. And I don't mean to cut you off, but like, that's the other part about Miami's, again, like the offense is more than pick and roll, period. And it's definitely more than pick and roll for Miami. But with their pick and roll attack in particular, like one of the adjustments that Denver made was like, okay, we're not sending this extra layer of help behind Jokic. we're going to trust Jokic to defend Jimmy Bam 2-on-2. And so if the nail help isn't there, then you talk about some of those early pockets that Jimmy had to get into the pull-up and stuff like that. And it's just like, hey, man, they are saying we will defend this 2-on-2. You 20 combined shots at the rim for Jimmy and Bam, if that's the setup. That's what it has to be. Like, if this is what they're going to do, if they're not going to provide that extra layer, one, you need the pull-up for Jimmy Butler to hit. And it was fine, but it wasn't at the elite level like we saw in round one of the playoffs or anything like that. If the pocket pass to Bam is available, like, he has to knock down those shots. We know that. But, like, if you're now, if Denver is just saying we sent too much help in the first two games and y'all were able to play out of that, nah, we trust Jokic, you just have to take that on. And I don't mean to make that reductive, but these are golden opportunities for you to get to the rim in a series that Miami largely has not been able to get a large share of their shots at the rim. This seems to be the opening. This seems to be the invitation. And so heading into game four for Miami, primary question for me becomes, what can we do against Jokic and pick and roll to make them start sending that extra help again? Because we already know that they're not gonna late switch very often. They did sprinkle some in game three, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. But as a concept, they're not gonna switch that. We are going to have a drop pocket against this. And if they're not sending the extra layer of help, it's just 2v2. We have to ding Jokic to the point to where Denver has to get more aggressive with their help. And if they get back to that level of aggression that we saw in game one and game two with the help, then that opens up some of the cuts behind the help, some of the relocations behind the help. Now Jimmy stringing things out and engaging Jokic, you see some of the openings that we saw in game two again. You get more fruitful three-point opportunities for Miami, and it all kind of comes back for you, which I guess I can quickly note now. This was a game that Miami lost, and they did not shoot well from three. A little shade over 31% from three. So I'm glad that we have gotten, over 30 minutes of finals talk before us saying, hey, the Heat didn't make threes and they lost. Some proof that there are basketball things to talk about. But anyway, they did not shoot well in this game. But there are pockets to attack. And I think if you zoom out, if you're Miami, like, if I went into this series and you told me, Nikias, the Nuggets are going to defend Jimmy Bam pick and rolls 2-on-2. And they're also not going to switch very often. I'd be like, this series is absolutely going seven. Like, I felt like it was going seven initially, but if I knew that heading in that we were going to get to this point where it's just 2-on-2, I absolutely feel like the series is going seven now. Because that's going to be just the first time consistently that Miami, and that duo in particular, has been able to get that. And not have to deal with extra bodies. Or, again, it's not like Jokic has been at the level a ton against Jimmy Bam pick and rolls. It would be the most free that duo has been all postseason long.
This is the weird part where I'm at with Miami offensively. One, small margin for error. Two, Denver really looking to hammer that portion of the floor because they know they can score on the other end. Three, you still have your automatics in place. It's just now, how decisive are you going to be?
Yeah.
And I kind of circle back to the third quarter. What button were they trying to hit? Hey, we kind of want to put Jokic in pick and roll. Here's a foul on a Bam roll. Here's Max Strus deciding to turn the corner and try and finish. Okay. Here's a Jimmy Butler post up. Help comes. Max has a three. He misses. Okay. We kind of can put Jokic in pick and roll, but we kind of go Chicago action, but we kind of just swing the ball and then we kind of give to Jimmy and then Denver's help gets his turnover. What pressure did you put on them?
Mm-hmm.
With your small margin for error, you can't afford to not explore your automatics at the start. Jokic, you're in a drop. We know what we have. Jimmy has space. Bam is going to have a pocket. Salute to Denver's weak side defense. As you stated earlier, the low man did a much better job. And because the low man did a better job, as you stated, that nail help didn't have to be as extra.
Mm-hmm.
The responsibilities have shifted. And so, like, how comfortable did you think Gabe Vincent felt in this? How comfortable did Kyle Lowry look in this? And, like, I know I'm blending points here, but that's the battle for Denver to where, okay, Jimmy and Bam, they're going to have their spots. Y'all can't feel comfortable like y'all did in game two. It can't just be you dribble off and everything's good. No, we need to be more active. We need to be more engaged.
make you navigate at least a little help or deal with me on your shoulder, something like that.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, okay, where does Miami go from here?
Mm-hmm.
Is it movement? Is it Jimmy as a screener? Is it Bam as a screener? Can you just reestablish what you've already done
mm-hmm.
and get Denver back in a tough position? I'm stuck wrestling with that.
And I do think, just to bounce off a couple of things, like one with the help point, like it was funny because like Denver was missing it. Like sometimes, all right, depending on who the low man is or just where the X is being around the floor. Yeah, we'll peel in this help behind Jokic. It won't be as aggressive as it was in game two. We'll still peel it in so you know there's a presence there. Other times, Jokic, you got it. We got someone parked at the nail. This is a strong dig. You are not dribbling freely to get into a pull-up or just to navigate that space, engage Jokic, drop the pocket pass off. You are not getting comfortable. And so I think that general point of Miami's guards not feeling that level of comfort is a good one from you. Beyond that, though, I just wonder... I don't know. It's more of a question, but I just wonder what happened to that decisiveness for Miami, though. Because, like, even with Denver doing that, pocket still existed for them.
And not to cut you off, but that's where I'm like, the reason I say that is there were plays where it felt like Miami was about to attack something, and then they stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for some reason, as soon as you said that, I remember a play, I want to say it was fourth quarter, game may have been, quote-unquote, out of hand, but it was a dribble handoff for Gabe Vincent. He had the option to take a dribble and engage the big, Jokic, and instead caught it and let it fly from three.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't necessarily a quote-unquote bad shot, but it was also...
It felt early. It felt rushed. It didn't feel...
Did you keep pressure on Denver? And like, yeah. I understand the shot making is important, but at the same time, you got to engage this defense and play out of it. And that's where I'm like, can Miami refine that? Was it just a bad night? Like, where are we at there?
Yeah, like, it's funny because, like, if, you know, two or three of those threes go in on some of these possessions, we're looking at a completely different finish. Like, Denver probably still wins the game, but at least it feels different. But to your general point, like, the margin for error for Miami isn't there. Like, they do have to shoot well, but ultimately, they have to find whatever pressure point or pressure points that Denver has and hammer those and get Denver in rotation, make them feel it, play out of that, and ultimately knock down enough shots from there. And it just felt like for pockets of that game, they just could not get there. And Denver did things to throw off the rhythm. Denver played well defensively. Jokic certainly held up. But Miami also, like, again, I go to like the empty corner / empty side thing. I'm just like, there's just no reason. Like, you hit them with a level of volume they haven't seen in 5 years. And then you get Max Drew's 4 assists. And at least 2 of those came off empty side looks. And it's like, you just went away from it. And then when you did go to it, it's okay. We have 3 guys stacked on this side. We're going to go empty side and make sure Bam's rolling to that side when Denver is now like releasing their lower help and sending high help. So it's just like, okay, what exactly is Bam rolling into then? What is the plan? What is the purpose here? What are you actually going to get? It just felt odd for Miami offensively.
So I got a question for you.
Okay.
Now I'm taking a little bit left field, but what's more important for Miami? Trying to figure out how to handle Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, or hey, let's not give up 60 points in the paint.
60's a big number, man. That's a really big number. And it's not like this was Denver had 23 offensive rebounds, so postseason hot. Like the offensive rebound battle was, I think, 13-10. Advantage Denver, but it wasn't some large like this was a lot of I am getting downhill, Jokic is posting up, here are these cuts from Christian Brown. They have to clean that stuff up. And I will say, just to, you know, going back earlier about you saying like this kind of still felt like a Miami game, I think largely did that's true. Like it was a lower possession count. I did feel like Denver as a whole, like the tempo felt better in the half court, and I think there was more intention about pushing after makes and just generally getting into the actions a little bit earlier. And we talked about it during the watch party. At least for me, it felt like, not that Jokic ever takes a long time to make decisions. He's very decisive, in addition to being smart and being really good. It felt even more decisive on his post touches. It felt even more decisive on like those pick and pops. Like, at least I know what I'm getting to and I'm going. more decisiveness from Jamal Murray. He didn't just get downhill. He went downhill quickly. And so I think for Miami, it's going to be trying to find a way to slow them down a little bit, first and foremost. But it was just funny watching them go into like their full court press, whether it was full court press and they stay man or full court press into their zone. And I have some zone questions for you, buddy. Even when it was that, it's just Denver jetting up the sideline. And it's, oh, okay, cool. There's 20 on the shot clock. We can run our offense now. As opposed to bleeding the clock a little bit with that press. And then you try to add, then you have the physicality off ball. And now Denver's working deeper into the clock. It felt like Denver did a much better job of playing faster. Miami couldn't load up their help from there. And because they couldn't load up their help from there, in combination with Denver altering their spacing and making it even more difficult to gear up against Jokic and Murray, the paint felt even more open. Because when Miami would react to help, that's opening up these cuts that we saw from Christian Brown. And it's all connected for me. So I think if they're able to, well, I think naturally if they're able to find an answer for Murray Jokic, then they take that. But I do think they have to prioritize taking away the easy ones in the paint. And I think that may just start with a literal slow them down. Make them dig a little bit deeper in the clock so we can gear up and we can make sure they don't get any kind of easy stuff on the back end. I guess just to bounce off of that, how did you feel about the zone reps for Miami in this game? Because I found myself on the rewatch pretty concerned about what I saw.
Why were you concerned?
It felt like, on the rewatch at the very least, like just the placement of Jokic in the zone and where he started and where he got the ball, it felt easier getting him inside the arc. And Jokic was able to have fun from there. We also saw a couple of cuts from Christian Brown against the zone. But Jokic more on the edge, well, more on the low block and then also more on the edge, and then getting easier catches from there versus trying to enter from the top, and Miami doing a good job of staying matched up like we saw in game one and game two, just trying to keep a body on him. It felt like they moved Jokic around better, and Miami didn't have immediate counters to that. And so that's where I was like, hey, it gets problematic if now 3 games into the series, if it does become we can't play zone against Jokic. Because if nothing else, that's a tool for Denver to get deeper in the clock on offensive possession. If they're able to find Jokic quickly now and they're able to play out of that, I get concerned. But I ask you, because one, you have a better eye than do. Two, if you did see anything different, like you could talk me off the ledge on that front.
I mean, it's no different than the problem we discussed earlier. Miami zone is it's a tool, not a solution in this series. And I think that we've just seen counters from both sides. Denver looked very good against the zone in game one, started out looking very good in game two. Miami said, absolutely not. No more elbow catches for you. Tempo of the game kind of changed it. You saw in this game, to your point, Nikola Jokic saying, hey, cool, nice denial. I'm now going to take 2 more steps this way. You, Miami zone defense, find yourself in a scenario where 3 people want to guard me. Instead of one person denying me the ball, I've taken 2 more steps, so now it's post-up. So bam, in the middle, I kind of need to go there. Guard on the wing, I kind of need to help out. Person who was denying Jokic, I should also kind of help. even if not all 3 commit by game one, just the fact that they have to think and pause distorts the matchups enough. You throw in Denver's cutting, it makes it tough. So again, the zone's not going to be the elixir for you. Like, buddy, you enjoyed your night too much. You are going to feel ill. there's no magic thing here. You got to go through it a little bit. You can prevent a little bit. Eat some good food.
Hydrate.
But, bud.
Game 3, the Pedialyte game. <in here. laughs> What in blazes? We're going.
You know me. I try and mix an analogy in, man.
That you do.
Actually, you know what? Did you feel like Jokic's drop was a little deeper at times?
Last night? Yeah.
So how much do you balance Jokic just committing to it and Denver not opening other things up? But that's interesting because now, hey, does Bam know where the pocket is? And does he just accept a short roll? Like, I'm interested in that adjustment. But, man, I got to ask you.
Okay.
Was this a series-shifting win from the Denver Nuggets?
I'm gonna make sure I phrase this correctly now. Because the last
last time I asked you, you was like, nah, man, I'm not sure. Next day, yeah, I think this is a shit. I was like, dog. I literally asked you this question 24 hours ago.
You asked me and I was like, you know, it doesn't feel like that's the case. And then I rewatched the game. I got the rewind and all this stuff. You know what? Like this could be a shifter if Denver, you know, if Denver doesn't do anything, if they aren't able to find an answer. And sure enough, Denver did make some tweaks with their help, combined with Miami just not hammering it to the same degree. So it turned out not to be a series shifter. That's why I'm just like, I don't know. In this regard, I feel like it can be. Just bouncing back to our earlier conversation about how much Denver leaned into Murray Jokic, and that could just be the central, can you find enough answers to slow this duo down? It's, again, because we know the best version of Denver is we have this, plus we have MPJ off ball, plus we have KCP off ball, plus we have Bruce Brown cutting or sprinkling in some pick and rolls, plus Christian Brown cuts, plus Jeff Green doing this. That's the best version of them. If they can just strip all of that down to say we're going Murray Jokic, have fun, and still post an offensive rating over 121 despite making 5 threes in the game, that's a problem.
No, I feel you. I can't shake that. Do we live in a universe where Miami's offense plays better? Jokic and Murray, either one of them don't have it or it's not the same level, and now Denver has shifted too much of their money towards just those two. Extremely wild thing to say, I know.
Yeah, I understand what you're coming from.
Just a thought bubble. So where can you now keep your flow? Like, does the MPJ and KCP game that's eventually coming have the same impact if you've committed to just playing everything out of the two-man game? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, it could feel different from a flow perspective. And then, even then, like, maybe the MPJ or KCP game just looks different. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, here's MPJ knocking down a spot-up three. Then here's MPJ in transition. Here's this MPJ duck in. Here's this MPJ pull up. Now it's just Jamal Murray and Jokic have run another pick and roll. Here's extra help. Here's a crucial three for MPJ. And it matters. But it's not the avalanche that you can get if you have the mix of those two playing off each other and the movement and everything else that comes with that. I feel you on that front.
One point I want to make on the Denver defense point. With your talk about Denver changing the help and Jokic doing a better job, I think it was just more nuance from Denver's help as far as knowing our responsibilities, but not necessarily showing you right off the bat. Mm-hmm. So instead of just pre-rotating or pre-loading up, it's, hey, we know what we're doing, but y'all don't know quite yet. You don't see it. And then I also think Jokic being in a deeper drop, hey, we don't have to necessarily send as much help. To your point, like, hey, he's going to contain the space. I can get back out, or I can show my help early and then get back out. Like, it just felt like they had more of a rhythm defensively. Yeah. They were more locked in.
Yeah. It felt more like, I guess, to bounce off of that and try to summarize it, like, it felt more like game two was like, we are going to do this. It's your turn. For Denver's defense, and mine was like, okay, well, this is what you're going to do. We know how to play out of this. Versus game three, where Denver's like, this is our general principle. If y'all don't navigate the space well enough, we're staying home. And if we need to help, then we can. And this is the general framework of how we like to help. And so, like, I agree with you. Like, it did feel like more nuance there. And again, I will say, like, Miami does have pockets here. And so I'm curious to see what game four looks like, what Miami prioritizes. Do we see the same level of aggression from Jimmy Butler? I think it's 24 drives for Jimmy Butler in game three, which is easily a series high for him in the finals so far. Do we see the same level of aggression from him? Do we see more purpose offensively? And, you know, big question for Miami. Are they able to knock down those shots from the perimeter when they get them? If so, not shocked at all. This is 2-2 going back to Denver. Like, I don't think Miami is out of the series yet. I will say just what we saw from Murray and Jokic in that game three, though, like, that's, I would understand people tilting, like, oh, wait, this is just kind of it. They can't do anything with these two. So we'll see. I'm very excited about this game 4 on Friday. Any other closing thoughts? Any other players you want to shout out? Any other questions that you have from the game 3 or heading into the game 4?
I mean, we've talked about it a lot. I think Miami's guards just got to continue to stay aggressive, show back up. I think that changes the math. I think Aaron Gordon did a really, really good job of saying, oh, wow, you're not Kevin Love. I would like to attack you immediately.
Yeah, Duncan.
Hey, Duncan Robinson, what's up? Oh, you're Gabe Vincent and or Kyle Lowry? Awesome. Please throw me the ball.
Yeah, so we'll say a more forceful game from Aaron Gordon in game three than we saw in game two. More reminiscent of what we saw early in the game one for Aaron Gordon. So that's a good shout. I guess I would just note just on the pace or pace adjacent, I guess. Just kind of funny that in terms of transition frequency, which is simply the percentage of possessions that came in transition, 17.6 for Denver, which is the highest of the series. So naturally, they had the least efficient transition game of the series. Only 1 point per possession on those trips. So it's funny that they got to run more and they just didn't convert. I would still keep an eye on that for Miami because you still want to keep this a slower paced game. You do not want Denver running a lot. You do not want to give them live ball turnovers. You don't want to give them long misses. So just something to keep an eye on heading into the game four.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
While we are on the NBA side, we can transition to some news or some news, some eventual news. I don't know. Peel the curtain back very briefly. 20-second story. Yesterday, I went to the movie theater, saw the new Spider-Man movie.
Oh.
12 out of 10. Tremendous content. I'm not going to spoil it on the pod, but like the end of the end of the movie had me in shambles.
Man.
So naturally, I exit the theater. I'm going to my car. I check my phone. I get a notification, and it is Chris Haynes saying that the Suns are going to waive Chris Paul. And I'm just like, wait a gosh darn minute. I am not prepared emotionally to deal with the end of that movie and Chris Paul news. And since it's Twitter, Chris Paul slander and jokes within literally 5 minutes of each other. I can't do it.
So you weren't ready to go across the CP3 verse?
Anyway, so we got the initial tweet from Chris Haynes saying that the Suns plan to waive Chris Paul. He has the partial guarantee on the contract. Adrian Wojnarowski later dropped the tweet slash article saying that that's one of the many options that they're exploring with Chris Paul, exploring trade options with him. Steve, I'll ask you simply, what do you do with any of that information right now?
I wait, honestly. Only because of the way it was framed, that they literally listed all the options that they could do. Hey, yeah, we had a chat. You know, we could waive them. We could trade them. We could stretch it. We could bring them back. And I'm like, all right. All right, I see what y'all doing. So y'all like Chris Paul. Y'all would not mind Chris Paul staying here. You don't want to pay that price.
Correct.
How do we figure out how to keep you here without doing all that? Or
how do we turn that into something that can help us now?
I feel like that's the only debate. I don't know. Like, I'm in full wait and see mode. It's staggering to see it happen. But at the same time, it's very clear that that Ishbia is ready to go.
Boy, is he.
He's ready to go. And so it's go time for Phoenix. So keep an eye on draft day. Keep an eye on that June 28 deadline. We're going to see. But again, I wouldn't be surprised. Chris Paul gets traded, or Chris Paul gets stretched, waived, gets re-signed. Like, there's a lot of possibilities here.
There you go. I guess I'll ask quickly. Obviously, we'll have some answer by June 28th, and we can talk about it in depth there. But just early thought, if it's not Phoenix, where would you like to see Chris Paul go? Well, you can deal with, like, actual, like, destinations once that becomes more prevalent. But is there a fit that you'd like if he is eventually waived from Phoenix, waived or traded from Phoenix?
I could just pick anywhere?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good question. Here's the thing. Is he just Chris Paul, the Chris Paul starter? Is that the world we're living in? I'm assuming that's what we're doing.
I'll put it this way. Like, I don't envision a world where Chris Paul is not averaging at least 28 minutes per game next season. Now, whether that's low minute starter, whether that's high minute six man somewhere, I think 28 seems to be the cap. So if you want to use that as a general framework, you can.
I'd like to see him. There's a whole bunch of places that he would work. So that's not necessarily the issue to me. I guess in theory, I'm trying to figure out where could he go and potentially still be Chris Paul. Like, everywhere else has kind of a person in that spot. Mm-hmm. So I'm struggling to land, like, Milwaukee, I guess. But at the same time, how many minutes is he really going to play? And that's where I get where I think he could help a whole bunch of teams, but it would be in a whole different role.
Yeah.
If we're talking just purely this version of Chris Paul, are you ready to boo me?
Yes, actually, I am. Go ahead.
Chicago Bulls.
Boo! No.
That's about all I could come up with that were not Lakers Clippers related, because y'all gonna do that anyways. So
I feel you.
Yeah. You know what?
What's up?
New Orleans?
It could use the leadership. I could see it. Hashtag finish the story.
What do you mean they need some leadership?
Hey, man.
Yeah.
So Milwaukee's interesting. The LA teams seem very obvious. How would you feel about Boston?
I don't like it because of the defense. And so for me, it would be, what's the overall impact? Because if now teams are just saying, hey, Chris Paul, come here, buddy. What does Boston do?
Okay. Does the history of elite scram switching do anything for you?
No.
Okay.
I just seen it. I just seen it with my own eyes.
You did. It ain't Boston though, you know. But okay. Just wanted to see where you
were. No, I saw that Boston have that problem with non-Chris Paul personnel.
No, I got you. Fair enough. That's a fair counter. Let's see, where else are we with the rumor mill? Not even the rumor mill, but just the news portion of the program, I suppose. We can shift to the W very quickly. The Lynx-Liberty game was postponed yesterday due to air quality issues impacting the Barclays Center in Brooklyn and greater New York area following the wildfires in Canada. Not sure when that game is going to be rescheduled, but more importantly, I just hope everyone is okay in Canada with the wildfires. Also, New York, I've seen some of those photos on the timeline, that is not what the sky is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
I hope everyone is okay and you're being as safe as you possibly can be.
Yes, I hope everyone in Canada is okay. I hope everyone in New York and up north is okay. That's scary stuff. So that's first and foremost. Number two, can we please stop comparing horrific looking sky images, please? It's all bad for everyone.
We don't have
to compare traumas. And also, third, uh-oh, y'all, it's looking kind of hazy.
Okay, go away. All right. While we're on the not fun news, some injury stuff we can go through very quickly. The Dream going to be out without Ari McDonald with a torn labrum for 3 to 4 weeks. That is on top of Daniel Robinson already being out. I would assume, one, they try to find another guard if they can. I think they're going to be close to, if not available, not have the option for like a hardship exception and get a player in if they dip below 10 players. This also should open up some more playing time for Haley Jones. So I'm intrigued on that front at the very least. More AD Durr minutes. They have been very aggressive so far to start the season. So I'd imagine their scoring impact will be even more important in light of the Dream losing out on some guard minutes right now. So we will keep an eye on that on the Dream front. I don't even know how to keep track of everything that's happening with the Sparks and their roster. So Azaray Stevens is back.
Yep.
Carly Samuelson was on a hardship exception, or was just on an exception period, and she was waived. Then they waived Joyner Holmes to bring Carly Samuelson back. And apparently, I think it was Richard Cohen of Her Hoop Stats wrote about how the Sparks originally signed Laysha Clarendon with one of the exceptions that was available to them because Katie Lou Samuelson was pregnant. And so the Sparks were able to toggle who was designated under that exception. And basically, they were able to flip that to Carly. And so that's how she's on the roster. Laysha now has the standard contract now. At any rate, Azaray Stevens is back. Carly Samuelson is back. The Sparks are as whole as they can be right now. And I'm intrigued to see what...
They probably hope they are a little bit more whole after a game where, what was it, 24-6 at the end of the first quarter? And they lost.
Gave the Seattle Storm their first win of the season. Jewel Lloyd eclipsing 4,000 career points as a Storm member. Congrats to her. Jewel Lloyd's just been tremendous this season, by the way. Well, we talked about it a little bit on the last pod, but she's been fantastic. So that's fun. Also on the hardship contract front, Odyssey Sims back in Dallas. So that's fun. From earlier this week, Alyssa Thomas and Neko Ogumike winning players of the week. Neko with 24, 13, and 5 averages across two games. It was a back-to-back over last weekend. Alyssa Thomas nearly averaging a triple-double, 14 points, 12 boards, 9.7 assists. Did have a 14, 9, and 16 game against Minnesota. I think that played a big part in her winning player of the week. So that's fun. And before getting to some general takeaways, All-Star voting is live for the W. That All-Star starter voting went live on Wednesday, June 7th. That will be live until June 21st. So we have two more weeks to get games in, performances in, that we can kind of finalize who we think the All-Star starter should be. But your first draft, you're not beholden to it or anything like that. Who are your starting guards? It's four guards, six front court players. Who are your starting guards as of?
Ah, you started June with 8th. The guards. So I'm giving you some live content. I took a screenshot from what I did yesterday. Okay. I figured this may be more entertaining for the pod. Okay. I have Jackie Young. Mm-hmm. I have Jewel Lloyd. Mm-hmm. I personally have Arike.
Okay.
Ogunbowale.
Got you.
And then it gets interesting. Alicia Gray having a heck of a season. Ryan Howard, very good at basketball. We have Kelsey Plum still playing well, not at the same level. Sabrina still playing well, not the same level. Kelsey Mitchell still playing well, maybe not the same level that you've seen been at. Marina Mabry still playing well. Lexi Brown had a heck of a start. Diane Taurasi getting it done, filling it up. I'm just saying. I want Chelsea Gray.
Okay. Okay, I feel you. So the guards that you just listed, was that your short list?
Yes.
That you would assign from? Okay, list. Got it.
But I went Jackie Young, Jewel Lloyd, Arike for sure. And my fourth is where I had the issue. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Right now I go Chelsea Gray, impact, scoring, clutch play, assist. Hard to take that away. She leads the pack for me. Where'd you go?
I think that's fair. We mostly have the same guards right now. I also have Jewel Lloyd. I also have Chelsea Gray. I also have Jackie Young, but with a quick quibble. Why is Jackie eligible for guard? That's the part where I'm just like it's Chelsea Gray, it's Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young at the three. She's played a lot of three. She's played some four. When is she playing guard? Like, I'm selfishly like cool because it makes it easier to suss through the front court votes for me that she's not a part of that group, but that's not where she should be. Like, this feels...
Wasn't she a guard last year?
Yeah, and I had the same complaint last year.
Buddy.
This is like this is the DeMar DeRozan thing all over again on the W side, though. Like, buddy. That's not how that's supposed to go.
But I just Googled Aces three guard lineup and it pulled up.
That doesn't...
You want to disagree with Becky Hammond? Have a blast.
Hey, man.
Side note. Not,
go ahead.
Side note. Kalia Copper, low-key got hosed. Man, real quick, before you get to continue, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I went to front court, and I was sorting through things, and I saw Cobb there, and I was like, oh, cool. It says guard forward. Mm-hmm. I can just go to the guard, see if that makes more sense. I went to the guard. She was no longer there.
That's tough.
Nah, I was like,
they said she guards forwards. That's what she does. That's kind of tough. But no, I guess just to get back to my votes, though, I do have Jewel. I have Jackie Young. I have Chelsea Gray. I also have Alicia Gray. Yeah, I think what Alicia Gray has been able to do on both ends of the floor, acclimating to the new group, more aggression from her, more drives from her, getting to the line. It's been a nice start to the season for her. Arike was on my short list, and she does have a lot of responsibility for that Dallas Wings squad, especially in light of Tierra McCowan first getting hurt, coming back, and now she's going back overseas, I think, for EuroLeague play. So they've had to shift a lot of things around. She has been the constant, and I think she still leads the W minutes played. So I definitely understand the argument. It is hard to get past the efficiency at a certain point, though. It's a true shooting percentage under 45 is where I'm just like, okay, I understand the attention that you draw. I understand the type of shots that you make and the value that those have for the offense. The Wings still have the fourth ranked offense in the league this year. So I don't want to dismiss it. I don't think it's a bad selection to have her in. She's on my short list. But like that feels a little low for me to look past in light of some of the other guards and what Alicia Gray is doing as well. So that's where I'm at right now. We'll see where I'm at in 2 weeks, but that's where I land on the guard front. Steve, where are you on the front court?
Front court's a mess. There are seven folks, probably more, that deserve consideration. I had an easy time with the first five.
Okay.
Brianna Stewart, there you go. Asia Wilson, there you go. Elena Deladon, there you go. Brittany Griner, Nneka Ngumike.
Okay.
Five out of six. Satu Sabali is right there.
Mm-hmm.
22, 10, 3 assists, totally deserving. Nafisa Collier is having a good year. Aaliyah Boston's having a very good rookie season. Alyssa Thomas was my sixth pick.
Okay.
And that's where it's going to get very interesting. Like, I feel like it's locked. It's going to be very hard to deny five of these six folks, in my opinion.
I got you.
So it just comes down to who gets the six.
Yeah.
I'm very intrigued to see what you have to say on the front court.
Okay. And I guess just to quickly bounce off of that, it's one, it's early. Two, these are just the starters. So like anyone that doesn't make it probably makes the team still overall. So it's just important to add that context. But for the why are you laughing?
Hey, how much bail? What's the bail today?
What's the bail today, is it say? But for me, Brianna Stewart was an easy one for me. Asia Wilson was an easy one for me. Alyssa Thomas was definitely an easy one for me. Yeah, like I think what she's doing for the Sun team, not the same level of offensive efficiency, but the responsibility that she has, the playmaking has been there. She has been, for my money, the best defender in the league this year. That holds a lot of weight for me. The Sun have been very good. They did just lose to the Aces, but literally everyone that's faced the Aces so far this year has lost to the Aces, so hard to hold that too far against them. So those three is like, all right, bet. And then from there, it's like, man, I have three spots available and I have at least six people that I feel really good about.
Oh, okay.
And so I wound up with Nneka Ogumike, Elena Deladon, Satu Sabali for right now. I have BG 7 on my list right now. And that's not because she has not played well. I do think it's a combination of a couple of things, at least early on right now. One, the level of versatility that we're seeing from the other players that I have right now. Combined with availability plus winning. And not that it's BG's fault. But if we're looking for tiebreakers with a very tough front court group right now, the Mercury having one win is kind of tough. And also only playing five games, whereas others have played seven or eight, also kind of tough. And so that's where she's on the outside looking in for me right now. But ultimately, one, I'm just going to end up being wrong by the time the actual votes comes out. And two, it may not matter in 2 weeks anyway. But that's where I have with my starters right now. Satu's been incredible on both ends of the floor. Her versatility has popped for me. What NECA's been asked to do on both ends of the floor. Different schemes that she's cycling through defensively in particular. That's been a lot of fun to watch. Do I need to make the EDD case? The way she's been...
Are you allowed to after last year?
What does that mean?
You said she wasn't a top 10 player.
That is not what I said. Y'all, we're not going
to. All right. Well, we're about to take. Don't worry about it.
We are not about to do this. Top 10 season is a different conversation than top 10 player. I have never denied that she is a top 10 talent in the W. And I said that on the pod last year as we talked through this. And as she fell out of my all W thing, it was very much, well, she played, 25 games out of 36? That ended up being a tiebreaker for me. And that is consistent with my NBA work, as you very well know.
Man, you got free throws. You want to talk about Aaliyah Boston not getting touches? What's up?
Oh, man. Fever Sky, very fun game. Fun play call at the end to send the game into overtime from James Wade. Dana Evans. I'm loving the season that Dana Evans is having. I hate all the injuries and departures that Chicago's had to deal with over this offseason plus this season, but it's been fun to watch different players pop up and step up. So, very fun game. Give Aaliyah Boston the basketball. I think it's fair to say that she is already the second best player on the team. And in terms of just the general mismatches she can draw and the work that she's done on the post, the level of efficiency that we've seen from her, you have to feed her in clutch time. I think the basis of the offense has to be Kelsey, Aaliyah do stuff.
Even if it's not, the irony is they fed her the ball to stay in that position, to be in that position. And then once they were in overtime, just didn't. I was like, wait, there's like 19 high lows that y'all have just decided to not go with. And now you want to give her the ball when you're down 7 with a minute left. I don't understand.
Yeah, she literally had what could have been the game winning basket if James Wade didn't draw up the play that got the Alanda Smith layup for the overtime. She literally won you the game. And then you just I don't know. Like, I want to give props to Chicago as well. Like, their hedges were important. The ball pressure against Erica Wheeler in particular. Like, they didn't make it easy for them to make a pass to Aaliyah Boston. But there just has to be a little bit more intention there. You got to. Oh, boy. Yeah, that just has to be better. That has to be better. She is already a star. I already gave the props to Jewel. Guess I'll ask you, any... just quick thoughts on Ace of Sun. Like, they're playing again later tonight, recording on Thursday afternoon. But anything new pop for you between those two teams? Or is it just that it's a heavyweight fight? Rebecca Allen knocked down some shots. Asia's really good, whatever.
The Aces are very good. The Aces are unfair. I don't know what you do with Asia Wilson at this point. Single coverage doesn't work. The catches at the elbow in the post, very tough to deal with. Her and Chelsea Graham pick and roll, empty corner is not fair. Inverted pick and roll with those two is double not fair.
That was fun. I just feel like
the Aces, their lineup versatility, their defense, it's tough. I think this is a good test for the Sun. If they want to go deep in this playoffs, it's going to take their offense. And they're going to have to find a way to beat these type of teams and show up offensively in these type of games. You can't just rely on defense against the top tier of the W. And I felt like they found their rhythm, but what's the flow going to look like if teams have personnel to battle Bree Jones and Alyssa Thomas? Now what do you have? Is the guard play going to step up? If Rebecca Allen doesn't make those 6 threes, I think the game is very different. I'll put it that way. Yeah, I want to see what the rematch looks like.
Yeah. Felt like what the first half of that game was, basically, without the Rebecca Allen threes. Yeah, I'm right. I'm with you there. And Chelsea screening for Asia is just good luck. Good luck. I am curious to see, like, if they start sprinkling that in more, at what point do teams just start, like, trapping Asia on that? Like, hey, we know you have improved as a passer throughout your career. Can you make these live dribble reads when someone's smaller digging at your handle and stuff? Like, what does that look like? Can you hit those slips or those ghosts to Chelsea, depending on how up she comes on those inverted screens? Let's test this out. Because I don't think just trying to navigate the screen and trying to get back matched up is going to be the answer. Like, Asia's going to get easy stuff. Chelsea's going to get easy stuff. And I don't think the switch is the answer either. Because Chelsea does not care about shot contest, and we know what Asia can do against smaller players. So I do wonder when we see two to the ball on that front, but that was a fun wrinkle to kind of close that game out. I do have free throws, though. Do you have free throws?
I do.
Okay. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first real quick.
Okay.
Choose your fighter. You can only get one notifications about one offseason subject, Damian Lillard or Kyrie Irving.
Oh, Dame. Damian Lillard.
Okay.
The pride of Portland. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Who gets banned from the arena first? DJ Khaled, J. Cole, or Shakira?
I mean, of those three, it'll probably be J. Cole. No further answer with that one. But
okay.
Yeah, I believe it's gonna, yeah.
What is wilder, the overcorrection with Nikola Jokic or the discourse that existed beforehand?
Yes.
Okay. Who would you build a franchise around? Scotty Barnes or Shaedon Sharpe?
You know what? Scotty Barnes for me.
Okay. Better fit for Chris Paul, Lakers or Clippers?
Probably the Clippers.
Okay. What's going to be easier to explain in 15 years? Nikola Jokic, Jimmy Butler, or that one Tracy McGrady comeback?
Easier to explain?
Yep.
Probably Jokic.
Okay. Is Jeff Green the finals MVP for hosting that dinner?
He might be, because I don't know who would have been available for game three if he did. Coach Mike Malone has been fed up all series long. Go ahead.
Dwight Howard, does he actually want to come back to the league, or is he just really mad about the pay cut? Because how you go from trying to get everyone to come there to saying, I want to come back.
Oh, goodness.
I'm sorry, Dwight.
Oh, geez. Also going to say yes to that one.
Okay. The Seattle Storm, Phoenix Mercury, Indiana Fever, and Minnesota Lynx have one win. Each one of them have one win. If you combine them all, do they win the W?
Wow.
Tough team, man.
That is a tough team. You got, hold on. Jewel and Kelsey and Nafisa Collier and Julia Boston.
DT, Brittany Griner.
BG,
yeah. Kelsey Mitchell, Lee Boston. Hey, hey.
That gets kind of, yeah. They certainly be in the top three.
Okay. CJ McCollum had Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray as his best duo in the league.
Okay.
Do you agree?
I think it's a strong argument for it.
Okay. Do we need to have any other thoughts than congrats?
Apparently so.
Okay, I'm out of free throws.
Okay. Well, I will bounce off of your free throws. Safer app to use, Twitter or Snapchat?
Twitter.
Okay. Rank the reputation in New Orleans right now. CJ McCollum, Zion Williamson, or Chris Paul?
Chris Paul 3, CJ McCollum 2, Zion 1.
Okay. More likely to play with LeBron next year, D'Angelo Russell or Kyrie Irving?
D'Angelo Russell.
Okay. On the W side, Neko Gumake or Elena Deladon this year?
I don't like what you did there at all. EDD for me.
Okie dokie. Natasha Howard or Nafisa Collier?
Nafisa Collier.
Okay. Aaliyah Boston or Bree Jones?
Aaliyah Boston.
Okay. Ryan Howard or Kalia Copper?
Kalia Copper.
Okay.
I watched that Dream Sky game.
Fair enough. Dana Evans or Jordan Canada?
Dana Evans.
Okay. Lexi Brown or Ariel Atkins?
Lexi Brown this year.
Okay. Follow-up question. Lexi Brown would be the blank best guard on the Mystics right now.
Yeah.
Third.
Follow-up question. You sure?
What you mean?
I'm just asking.
You're not getting me papped up by that. Not by that trio. Ain't no way. No, thank you.
Third, I don't want no parts of this.
My name ain't Bennett, but I definitely ain't in it.
Listen here, likewise, because buddy, I was not prepared. I was not prepared. Anyway, that is all I have. So, unless you have closing thoughts, I would like to say thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you have the capability. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our Dunker Spot online watch parties. We've been watching finals games. We've been watching W games. We've been watching some wrestling. We've watched a little bit of everything in the room. So the link to the room should be in your podcast description. So if it's hyperlinked, just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans, live analysis, lots of fun, active chat, a very active chat, but lots of fun nonetheless. And with that, we will catch y'all next week. I think, maybe, we'll see.
Bye.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Dunker Spot ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie? Or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones? Or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the Daily News podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know the trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.